Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Disruptive CEO Nation, where company founders, entrepreneurs, and cutting-edge thinkers drop in from around the globe to share startup stories, insider insights, and hard-earned success lessons. Now, here's your host, a woman who mastered business by placing heels on the ground all over the world, having worked with and coached CEOs and senior leaders from over 90 countries, and who wants you to build your best business future, Allison K. Summers.
Hey, this is Allison K., and welcome to this episode of Disruptive CEO Nation. You know, brilliant minds solving today's business challenges can come from anywhere. And today's guest leaped from serving in the Israeli Defense Forces Elite Intelligence Agency, and maybe he'll tell us a little bit about that, to being a technology expert and an absolutely remarkable company founder that now you have the privilege of getting to know. So I would love to welcome Saji Alahu to the show. So Saji, introduce yourself formally and tell everybody about your company.
Thank you so much for having me, first of all. Hi, everyone. My name is Saji. I'm the CEO and founder of Tonkin. Started a company almost 6 years ago. And, very excited to the stage we're in right now, growing and helping a lot of big companies. Tonkin is, we call it the operating system for business operations. It's a platform that allows companies in operation teams within different industries, different size of companies, to really take ownership of how they solve problems in their organization and how they improve their business processes by enabling them to really build and compose their own customized solutions with no code. And so instead of relying on engineering and IT, to provide them with resources to solve problems, they can leverage their own, mind and creativity, and just, build like Lego blocks their own solution and improve their business. So thank you for having me, and I'm excited to have this conversation today.
Well, first, I practiced your name and I still butchered it. So thank you so much for that. But that's what I get when I talk to people from all over the world. And today we're talking to you, and you're based in, are you in California today?
I am. I'm in the Bay Area, yeah, Palo Alto.
Very nice. So I love companies that are solving practical problems for businesses. And I know I've been to the website. And so for our listeners, we always like to tell you, if you're near a computer, the website is tonkean.com. And you've got this lovely little video. And the video, I've got to say, makes it seem so simple. But when you talk about, no code solutions, as a business operator, I get very excited because I can relate to the problem of I've got all these little pieces everywhere and you invest all this money and then somehow things still fall through the cracks. But can you give me some, and our listeners, just a few more like practical examples of the types of things that companies come to you for and how you solve them?
Yeah. So you touched on an important point. When we think about solving business problems today with technology, there's been like that for a while now. There's sort of two options. You either go and buy off the shelf, sort of like package software, package application, mm-hmm. obviously became much easier to do with SaaS and cloud, or you custom build, with engineering resources. And when you do want to give the sort of control into the business, it's really limited to buying off the shelf. So you're trying to solve a business problem. You're trying to figure out what different pieces you can buy to kind of make means where the end of it, you end up with, a dozen that doesn't really talk to each other. It doesn't really align necessarily. And this piecemeal of software, unfortunately, ends up creating more inefficiencies than actually helping solving the original problem.
Yeah, and I think battles within companies, because, you know, production likes their software and sales likes their software, right? So it's a lot of debate inside a company.
Exactly. And in fact, the way I, you know, me personally, how I started Tonkin and the reason, you know, we started the company and the way we believe in Tonkin in general is that business processes are actually not about data. They're about people. But 100% of software today is focused on the data. And to your point, the reason salespeople like their own software, legal people like their own software, you know, marketing likes their own software, because they're different people. They have different, you know, goals and different way of working, different culture even sometimes. And so even though behind the scene, it's all similar data. Mm-hmm. If you're a technical person, you know, it's all just rows and columns of information. There's a huge, you know, bespokeness of how each area of the business want to work. So when you think about it that way, you're realizing that to solve any process that is centered around people or cross-functional even more, it's not gonna happen by buying one thing that's gonna fit everyone, because it's just irrational to the way, you know, they like to work.
Well, and so, I think all business leaders hate APIs. And that's, and so I'm like, okay, you guys, Tonkin has this magic wand, and I still don't think I fully understand it. Like, I've been to the website and I'm listening to you and I still don't understand how the magic wand works.
So if you double click into it, right? So APIs is literally the way to interface data. And again, if you're a business person, if you're, let's say, in sales operations or in legal operations, so you're in that legal department, but you're responsible for the operation, right? For the process. You still don't understand necessarily data flows. You're not an engineer. So APIs doesn't say anything to you, because mm-hmm. they're just the technical way of connecting data. What Tonkin does is we created an abstraction layer, which you call the magic wand, but it's really just taking those complexities and trying to wrap them into what we call enterprise components. So componentize it, make it composable in the sense of you can compose your own solution with those building blocks. And if we think about it from a practical perspective, let's say you have a process around contract, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone knows contracts, you know, turnaround time for contracts is extremely important for your sales velocity and so on. In a normal environment, what happened is, let's say your contract turnaround time is not fast enough. You know, someone in the business, maybe sales, maybe someone else, you know, would come and say, hey, this is not fast enough. We need to improve it. Legal would get blamed. They'll go search for a solution, you know, go online and search for a contract management system, as if the only reason the contracts are slow is because you're not managing them well enough. Now, I'm not saying
I'm going to say, I think I've had employees say those things to me, so I'm believing you.
It's really what it is. It's literally
if only you spent this $9,000 on this piece of software, I would do my job better.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the funny thing, is that it's not completely wrong. Like, a lot of times, you know, you do need to start, you need to organize your contracts better or whatever, you know, whatever it is. But that's almost like the baseline, because what happened is, if you do and you spend $9,000, it's more of like $1 million, you know, for bigger companies. Yeah. And it's been $1 million in 9 to 12 months to just deploy this thing. And then no one's using it. Why is that? Well, salespeople, they don't really care about your contract management system or your legal portal. And it's not because they're bad people, it's because they're what I call personal ROI. Right, their personal return over investment of what's important is different than what the legal team is. And to be honest, what's the company ROI is too. The company really cares about the contracts to be organized. Salespeople just want to get their contracts in, you know, as fast as possible. So they'll continue to do what they always do, which is emailing legal@company.com and just ask, where's my NDA? I need an MSA. You know, please, someone help me. It's urgent. And legal and attorneys and lawyers, they don't want to leave Outlook or email. You know, they just want to stay where they like to live too. So what happened is, when you're trying to find something to, when you don't understand deeply enough what is the role of every part of the machine, you end up just replacing inefficiencies with other inefficiencies. So with that example, if we then put Tonkin here, Tonkin is basically a layer that sits on top of it and aim to orchestrate and align the different pieces to your custom business logic. And this is kind of why it's confusing sometimes, and it's nuanced. Because my point is that just like you can't buy one thing to fit all, you can't buy one process to fit all. Even this contract approval, even if every company has it, it's going to look different. It's going to look different, depends on tools you have, but it's also going to look different, depends on the culture and the type of work you do and so on. So it's really key that you'll be able, that the business will be able to define their own logic, their own process, like what's happened when. You know, how do we going to handle requests that comes from salespeople that are about, you know, NDA versus how are we going to, you know, handle those if they're litigation questions? What if it's a VP asking versus an IC, you know, individual contributor? Like, what are we going to do? How do we want to handle it? Maybe some of the things we can automatically handle. Like, you want an NDA, maybe I can just generate one for you. Maybe if it's a litigation request, I don't want to mess around. I just want to bring it to the relevant lawyer. So that type of work is what we call orchestration. Mm-hmm. It's really conducting the situation versus automating it. So it's not about automating the tasks. It's about streamlining the entire process. It's somewhat like, you know, what assembly line did for a factory floor back in the day. You know, we work today like a pre-assembly line factory floor. Everyone has their own station of work. Some of it is heavy machines. Some of it is just group of people, you know, using, you know, doing things by hand. But there's nothing that actually help us coordinate it. And so long story short, with Tonkin in this picture, the salespeople can stay in their email or in their CRM, and Tonkin would connect to those. Lawyers can stay in their email, or maybe in the even SMS sometimes, and they can stay in that. And then the data at the end of the day can live in the CLM, in the contract management system, or whatever, you know, whatever it is. But the process itself, you know, what happens when these things, you know, come in? What happens if the request about the customer is a big customer, is a VIP customer, or a small customer? All of that logic blocks are defined within Tonkin without code, with a way for someone that is not technical but understand the process to actually compose that and maintain it over time. Because that's the last thing I'll say about it, is that business processes are not static. They always change.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So I have to ask, you're on this huge mission to solve this very practical problem in business operations, which is so, so critical. How did you go? I always like asking my company founders how they ended up with this mission. And so in the intro, I teased. And so we have to go back to first, tell us what on earth you were doing in the Israeli Defense Force. What was your role? Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, actually, we need to go a bit further back if we want to go there. But I always like to say that I'm a software guy. I was, you know, I was writing code since I was 10 years old, before there was Google to, you know, search online for how to do things. Was really learning by building, by just, you know, making projects and games. In the Army, I served in the intelligence unit in a technical role. I can't say what I did, and you honestly don't want to know.
No, that's okay.
but very highly technical, you know, very deep technological problems. And you know, after the Army, I joined a small startup, and also, you know, in a software engineering role. This startup got acquired, and I got the chance to grow a team significantly from, you know, a handful of people to over 100, even 150 people. And at that point, I was VP engineering. That was a public company. And, you know, I got the opportunity to basically grow through you know, with my team, grow the operation and grow the, you know, the different areas of the business that, you know, we had impact on. And that's how I ended up in the US too, because I'm originally from Israel. And so when you, you know, when you grow really fast, one thing that happens is that, you know, the reality that was true 6 months ago is no longer the current reality. And so it's much easier to see, you know, the difference. And as things start to grow, you know, operational challenges come up. You know, you need to align more people and you need to align more, you know, more areas of the business. And so, again, being a software guy, my first, you know, approach to anything is like, oh, just throw software at it. And by trying to do that, I realized we have a gap. I realized that everything I had, you know, to use and that we bought was limited. Everything I could have built myself would take too long to build custom. And I just felt like what is really needed is a way to do some stuff custom, but without the heavy lifting of building something completely from scratch. Because I also don't want to change the behavior of people. I want them to stay where they are. I just want the logic and the process to be different. And so it just feels, you know, it just felt like a big enough problem to solve, you know, misuse of software in the enterprise. That just felt like a big enough problem to solve. So I decided, well, I guess if not me, then who, right? And if not now, then when?
Well, tell us about how you then took the step out. And I'm sure having worked in a company that had that kind of accelerated growth, that was probably a really wonderful experience for you as a company founder. So tell us about those. Did you start and incubate your concept for a while? Did you work with an accelerator? Tell us about those early days when you, you know, from concept to we're incorporated and opening our doors.
So it is actually interesting. So another thing I like to say a lot is, you know, we've been around for 6 years now, and I feel like I've been singing the same song for 6 years. And 6 years ago, that wasn't as clear for a lot of people. And part of it was, you know, obviously our ability to grow and understand the market. But also, many times when you do come up with something new that is slightly different, it takes time. It takes time for the market to be ready. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's something that I learned the hard way that, you know, when they say timing is the most important thing, it really is about the fit. It's a two-way timing match. You know, it's not just, you know, you being ready or the market being ready. It's both you and the market needs to kind of meet in the middle at the right time. And so, you know, when I started the company, again, being a product guy, technology guy, we just went, you know, dive head first into building a product. And, you know, like many, when you do that and then you sort of like put it in front of people, you only then seeing all the different things that are missing or were wrong assumptions, but we learned a lot from it. So we iterated multiple times. And about 3 years ago, maybe 2.5 to 3 years ago, it's where I really feel that the market and us as a company met sort of like at the right point. And since then, we've seen a lot of healthy growth, which I'm very, very thankful for.
Well, let me ask you about, there's this concept I called, you know, the trust of co-founders. And I'm always curious how you met your co-founder and how you have settled in as you built the company to who spearheaded, you know, which part of the operation. So tell us a little bit about your co-founder.
Yeah. So my co-founder is the CTO. His name is Ophir. And he was actually with me since the army. We met the first day of the army.
That's like a touching story now.
It's a touching story. Actually, it's quite funny. We, you know, we went down from the bus that they get you there and they kind of tell you to, you know, to set your stuff on in a line, and you're all like 18 and have no idea what's going on. And so we just happened to you know, to just like be assigned one next to each other and uh-huh. start talking. That's kind of where it started. But we worked together through the Army. We worked together, and then we worked together, both, you know, at the same company, and grew together. So as I grew as, you know, in leadership, and, you know, eventually become VP engineering, he grew as an architect with me. So, we've been working together for over 14 years now. So, you know, a lot of trust is extremely important. We're also a global company from the beginning, from mm-hmm. the get-go. So the business and the HQ is in the US, but the R&D was always in Israel. And so he's in Israel. So when you do that type of structure, even more, you have to have, you know, full trust and very deep relationship where I know that he'll raise the flags that need to be raised without me asking, right? So that type of thing is extremely important. But that's, you know, he's a co-founder, but our founding team, which is like, you know, the first five people that joined the company, for me, they're as founders as the first founders. It's all of them actually are from that same unit in the Army, and but different ages.
Like, okay, so I don't want to go to dinner with you guys and like make one of you angry at me. Like,
no, it's just you know, it's a community. You know, in the US you have your alumni from universities that yeah. are, you know, so like a hot pot of talent. Then it's very similar in Israel from the Army perspective. But yeah, so you know, that team is this is the point. You need to have an entrepreneurship type of mindset, but then you also need, I completely agree with your point about the trust. It's a lot of trust and a lot of just sort of a deeper understanding of where, you know, where is the strength and weaknesses of each, because no one is perfect. Mm-hmm. So like really building a team that complement each other. Because it's not easy in the first years. You're really trying to, you know, go through the dark forest and trying to find, you know, figure
well,
out.
And I don't want to, we're going to come up on our time quickly, and I don't want to ask a lot, but did you all bootstrap this, pull your money together? Did you go out and do get investor funding? How did you get that first financial start?
So I was lucky to have you know, good network and relationship, you know, from my previous roles. So was able to secure, you know, angels investment. Mm-hmm. But we were very, very scrappy for years because, you know, we really wanted to figure out first what's going on. So it's really been 3 years. I have the company life that was very, very scrappy with just a little bit of money from angels. And then when things start to kick, they tend to go fast when that happens. So we had a very big seed round when that happened in 19, and then 2020, we had a big A round. And now this year, 2021, we had the big B round. And so we grew from 5 to 10 people in the beginning of 2020 to now almost 80 people. So it's wow. And we're planning to even double that in the next few months. So it's a very exciting time.
Yeah, good thing you have. Good thing you're a process business expert, right? You can.
Yeah. It's true. It's true. We actually
now you have to do it for yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
Quick question. Where do you go to get your inspiration, mentorship on being the best CEO you can be? Do you have time for it, or are you working all the time?
That's a good question. So I think there's the philosophical version of it, which is, you know, for me, I love, like, my favorite reading type is biographies. I just love trying to, you know, learn by osmosis, you know, from reading people I admire, you know, even with their struggles and their, you know, personalities issues sometimes, I really find it the most inspiring. And, you know, now, you know, streaming services, Netflix and whatever has, you know, similar programs. So I always recommend that as a way to kind of really think through how, you know, those people were able to think, you know, go through their struggles. And then on the tactical, like practical situations, you gotta surround yourself with people and ecosystem of people that care. And, you know, that's kind of a lot of times is angels. A lot of times is, you know, when you do bring VC monies, is to find partners that, you know, can help themselves and can help in, you know, sort of like expand that ecosystem. So, you know, I feel lucky with a lot of very, very successful and very experienced people that I was, you know, able to add to the network of Tonkin, and that I can, you know, pick up the phone and message when I need an advice.
Well, thanks for sharing that.
That's important.
Yep. So I want to ask you, what is the vision? If we come back and talk to you in 2 to 3 years, and you kind of already gave a little insight into the accelerated growth, but what's the vision for either yourself or for the company in the next few years?
Yeah. So I think actually the most important thing for me is not even the efficiency gains or, you know, process improvements, as much as our mission as a company, by the way, is we call it making a world of makers. Mm-hmm. And the idea is that, again, being a software guy, actually, I really, really value the impact that software made on my life and what it means to be able to build things. And in a digital world that we live in, it's basically like a superpower. You can build whatever you want. But I don't know if you know that it's stunningly only, I think, less than 0.4% of the population that can code. It's very, very, very small fraction of us that possess this power. And that's just makes no sense to me. You know, in the way I think about the world, we call it makers. It's the concept of people that has, when they see a problem, mm-hmm. their immediate reaction is, how can I solve this? Versus, hey, we have a problem, you know? And I believe that there's at least 10, 20%, if not 30% of people in general are makers. Just, you know, look at tribal society, you know, tribal humanity. If you didn't have at least 10, 20 people out of 100 that can make things, you know, we wouldn't survive as a society. So you're really missing out on a lot of people that can make a difference, that can create, innovate, you know, impact, just because they don't know how to code, or they don't have, you know, the sort of like the personality or skill set that requires there. And so by abstracting some of those complexities, what we're really after is to enable, is to expand the pie, is enable more people to be able to do things, not only allowing people that can only do it today, do it faster, but actually expanding it. And at that point, I think the impact is no longer linear. It becomes exponential, and you don't even know where it will take you. So that's kind of what's exciting about what we do and why we're doing it, is really trying to, you know, make a world of makers.
Well, and I'm listening to you, and I think about how many people in the technology space are truly, truly concerned about the digital divide. And we hear so much about, you know, where is the global wealth right now? And so I'm listening to you, and I can think of other wonderful company founders and entrepreneurs that I've spoken with that have these similar passion points. And so I really appreciate what you're saying. We need to come to a close. So if people want to learn more, connect with you, find out more from the company, where can they go?
Yeah, definitely the website, like you mentioned, Tonkin.com. We have a community that we actually created for operations individuals. It's not directly Tonkin community. It's just sponsored by us, but it's called it's just operations.community. That's the URL. It's called Adaptive Ops. We're doing amazing hackathons, and we have one coming up in December to help nonprofits and match them with makers around the world to help them, you know, for free. And we're excited about that. We had a very good one last year. And then obviously, you know, social media, Twitter, and just find us online. We're happy to talk to, you know, to anyone that that believe in this cause.
Well, thank you so much for that. And thank you so much for being a guest with us today. It was some new things. Usually I get tips, but I can't tell people, you know, how to go find their co-founder, by serving in the Army. That was a lovely story. I really appreciated that one. To our listeners, if Sagi said shared something that resonated with you, or you think somebody else needs to hear this interview, pass it along to them. Of course, we love reviews, and you can go to your favorite podcast site and give us a review. And also, if you haven't, you can pick up my book, Building Your Brand, Make Business Happen in a Global Economy, that has lovely case stories from Disruptive CEO Nation guests. So until then, keep your eye on the future, always be disruptive. And again, thank you for taking your time and being a wonderful guest for us today.
Thank you for having me.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.